You know, that situational awareness piece is imperative, because I always tell people you can't effectively fight what you don't see coming, right? Something catches you off guard. Yeah, you can fight it and you may get lucky, but wouldn't it be much better to see something coming from a distance and then be able to plan for either avoidance, escape, confrontation, whatever you got to plan for, well in advance of it actually materializing? You're doing yourself such a huge favor and giving yourself an advantage when it comes to use of force if you can do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are hearing this, you have once again tuned the Consequence of Habit podcast, and this is your host, JT. You know, on this podcast, we have in-depth conversations with our guests about the impact that habits have played on their life, both good and bad. And we use these conversations to help us better understand the things that are in our control and the things that aren't. It helps us analyze the things we do on a daily basis and have an honest conversation about whether those things are adding value to our life or they're holding us back. So with that said, let's get it started. All right, this week on the podcast, I have the honor of sitting down with Gary Quisenberry. Gary's a retired federal air marshal. He's an author. He's a competitive shooter. He was on the show Top Shot twice, where he came in third both times. And he's a regular contributor to Elizabeth Vargas' new show, iCrime. And he's brought on that show because he's an expert in situational awareness. All four books that he wrote are all based off the subject of spotting danger before it spots you. And there's a lot to that. There's one, just understanding some pre-indicators that something bad is getting ready to happen, but also understanding our own, how we carry ourselves, maybe things that we do without realizing that's making us a potential target. And that could be stickers on your car, maybe a t-shirt you're wearing. So I was fascinated by this conversation. You know, in this world where we don't get to control a lot of things, it's surprising sometimes that there are situations where you can see these incidents getting ready to happen. And maybe you can not just see it, but also do some things to react to it. All right, before we get to this week's guest, I want to give a quick reminder that October 1st, we have the Wim Hof Breathwork Cold Exposure Fundamental Workshop. This workshop is for anyone in the military. Could be present or past, active, guard, reserve, retired, veteran, doesn't matter. So if you're interested in doing this workshop, head over to the website, consequenceofhabit.org, hit events, scroll down and register. Still have some spots open. If you're somebody that can't go, but you love the idea of it, you like what we're doing, then you can also head to that website and you can show some love, hit the donate button. I think these workshops are where the rubber really meets the road. It's when we're sitting down with people, we're bringing experts or practitioners in whatever habit they're teaching, and we pass this knowledge on to communities that may or may not have had experiences with these types of habits. So, all right, this week's guest. Please welcome to the podcast, Gary Quisenberry. All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I'm getting to sit down with somebody I consider a friend, somebody I've known for quite, Gary, it's got to be at least 8 to 10 years or so.
At least eight.
Which always makes me happy to be able to do this and just have this kind of already rapport in place. Gary is a retired federal air marshal. A lot of people know Gary from his time on Top Shot. He spent two seasons on the show Top Shot. Third in both? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, third place both times. Couldn't break it.
Listen, to even get there is unreal. So let me start off first. I'm here with Gary Quisenberry. Gary's gone on after retiring from the Air Marshal Service, and he's written three books now.
I've written four, but the fourth one isn't published. It's not hitting the shelves until April the 1st of 2023.
Okay. And now you're also, what is your title on the Elizabeth Vargas show Crime? Is it a contributor? What exactly is your title on that?
You know what? I really don't know. I'm not exactly credited or anything on that show, but what it is, you know, the show iCrime with Elizabeth Vargas, people catch, you know, crimes in progress on their cell phones. and they submit them to this show. It's almost like America's Funniest Home Videos, but with crime. And some of them are funny, but some of them are pretty serious. And anyway, you know, I'm on what they consider to be their panel of experts. Okay. So they send us these video clips that are kind of in our lane. You know, where there's some experts on that are lawyers. You know, there's some law enforcement officers. You know, my lane is kind of the situational awareness thing, as well as anything that happens in the aviation domain, because of my background as a federal air marshal. And, you know, I'm a expert panel member or something like, I don't know what the official title would be.
Yeah. Yeah. So the timing of this, Gary, I think is really good. Cause I literally just got done giving a talk to a group of airmen. You're also a veteran in the Army, but I was talking to some airmen at Dover Air Force Base, and I was stressing how habits have never been, I gave an argument how habits have never been as so important as they are right now, which the reasoning behind that is this constant ways of distracting ourselves with high dopamine inducing activities and products. And when I was preparing for this interview, that kind of played into the direction I wanted to go. But it's because when we're talking about situational awareness, it's just the word awareness is hard to come by for a person now, because our attention has become a commodity. It's how companies make money. We spend more time glued to whether it's an electronic device, or I'm going to really stick on that, without understanding or realizing what's going on around us. The practice of situational awareness has to be, I mean, you must be getting inundated with people who are trying to find out what is this? How do I get better at it? How do I instill it in my kids? Even by companies. I mean, the violence that's going on with workplace violence, road rage incidents.
Yeah.
What has been your experience once you started taking this knowledge that you had, putting it down on paper and putting it out to the world?
What do you mean? Like, what's my knowledge in terms of what I've learned about it?
What has been the experience once you start putting this knowledge out to the world? Were people knocking at the door right away? Like, hey, we need to know more about this. Like, what has the process been for you to take your expertise that you learn as a federal agent? Putting it on paper and putting out to the average person out in the world.
Right. Yeah. So my experience has been, you know, like as a federal air marshal, you know, I teach a lot, and I used to be the firearms instructor for the Federal Air Marshal Service in Atlantic City, or a firearm instructor. And we always talk about situational awareness. We called it domain awareness, understanding what's happening around you, 360 degree awareness. And we throw all these terms out and stuff all the time, and we kind of don't give it a second thought. But I was teaching a private course for a group of firearms instructors in Kentucky. And I just kept throwing it out there about situational awareness and, you know, checking your six and, you know, a 360 degree kind of understanding of what's happening in your environment. And it was, I don't know, maybe a couple of months after I taught that course, a couple of the instructors reached out to me and said, hey, you know, like, we would really like to have you put on a course that's specifically about this, because you kept mentioning it, but it was never really fleshed out, and it kind of drew their interest. So when I was working as a federal air marshal, I would sit down on the plane sometimes with just my notebook, and I'd make notes, you know, about this class that I was going to put on for these guys. And the more I did that, the more, you know, I saw that it looked like a table of contents. Mm. So then I would take those bullet points that I was using for the class, and I would just kind of flesh those out on different trips. And then eventually I started putting pen to paper and getting it all written out, and, you know, it turned into a book. But, you know, the situational awareness piece is probably, regardless of what form of self-defense you're practicing, whether it be, you know, jujitsu, firearms, strip mall, karate, I don't care. Yeah. You know, that situational awareness piece is imperative, because I always tell people, you can't effectively fight what you don't see coming.
Yeah.
Right. Something catches you off guard. Yeah. You can fight it, and you may get lucky, but wouldn't it be much better to see something coming from a distance and then be able to plan for either avoidance, escape, confrontation, whatever you got to plan for, well in advance of it actually materializing? You're doing yourself such a huge favor and giving yourself an advantage when it comes to use of force, if you can do that. And unfortunately, a lot of people look at it like it's some sort of a superpower or something.
Right.
And it's, you know, like from the Jason Bourne movies. And it's not. It's something that's kind of ingrained in our DNA. But like you were saying earlier, it's also something that we kind of separated ourselves from, because now we don't feel so much a need to be in tune with our environment as we do. We need to be in tune with our Instagram account. You know what I mean? So people just stay locked into that cell phone, and it takes away from everything that their environment is trying to tell them about dangerous situations.
Yeah. My first experience with even the idea of it, I'm going to age myself here, Gary, but I'm going back to 1998, 1999. I was in the Air Force. I was stationed overseas. And for whatever reason, I picked up Gavin DeBecker's Gift of Fear.
Yeah.
And there was so much in that book that I just soaked in as much as I could. And there was something in there talking, and you mentioned it, like it's in us, right? It's inherently in us to have these instincts to see things before they happen. And I think even with the show that you're on now, you know, if people take the time to watch these videos, and you and I have seen these types of videos before, but there are telltale signs that violence or something is getting ready to happen, whether the way somebody stands, whether the way they're holding their hands, where their eyes are, lots of different telltale signs. Mm-hmm. And we just have to be in tune with it. And something that stood out in that book was these instincts. One, they have your best interest in mind. They're always looking after you and your loved ones, right? They're always kind of there. And then the other ones is there's a reason you're feeling the things that you're feeling. What I loved about your books is that it teaches you to one, to be in tune with that, and then to also have the courage and the self-awareness to do something about it when you see something happening. You know, in this world where we don't want to offend anybody, right? We don't want to come across as a certain way. You know, as a law enforcement officer, that's much easier. Has it been hard? How do you get that message across to your normal civilian that's just in going to the grocery store, in an elevator, you know, whatever?
Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing that I noticed, and, you know, just like you, I read Gavin DeBecker's book years ago. Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of mandatory reading when I started working in the federal prison system before the Federal Air Marshal Service. And then, you know, there are other books like Meditations on Violence by Rory Miller. Let me see. We got On Combat and On Killing by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who wrote the foreword for my first book, Spotting Danger Before It Spots You. But, you know, they all kind of deal with a very specific segment of the population. And the one thing that I noticed, and Gavin DeBecker does a really good job of putting things in civilian terms, sort of. But the one thing I noticed is, you know, the situational awareness is kind of a big picture type deal. It's not all dependent on your intuition. That's a huge part of it, you know, but there are also some other mechanics that go into kind of, I don't want to say forcing yourself, but teaching yourself to kind of engage with your environment and recognize, like you were talking about, what we call those pre-incident indicators, those little signals that give you some indication that there's going to be a dangerous situation coming your way, or, you know, some information that's provided by your environment to help you get out of a situation should you find yourself kind of caught in the middle of something. You know, things like exits, windows, improvised weapons, you know, things like that are stuff that you need to be kind of aware of in your environment. However, you know, I kind of warn people against being hyper vigilant and burning themselves out. You know, you see people walk into a restaurant and they're sitting with their back to the wall, and, you know, they're looking at all the exits and they're eyeballing everybody that comes through the door. You know, that's a little bit over the top. There's a method for practicing sound situational awareness without necessarily stressing yourself out or drawing undue attention to yourself. And that's what I tried to focus on in my books, is that comfortable medium where I can be aware of my surroundings without stressing myself out and pick up on those pre-incident indicators that I need to know so that I can keep myself and my family safe. And I think that's skills that you can learn them quickly. You know, it's not something that you got to go to Langley and learn from some CIA guy. Sure. You know, that's not what this is, but you can do little things right now as soon as you walk out of the door and increase your level of situational awareness tenfold that people are just kind of unaware of. And that's what I'm trying to do through my books, is just shine a light on that, these simple tactics and techniques that people can use to help themselves defend themselves should they need to.
Yeah. And without giving too much stuff away from the book, what are some of the most basic things that, what is like one thing you can throw out there? What is a basic thing that somebody can do to increase their situational awareness?
Well, you know, all of my books, and I don't have anything to do with the titles and stuff like that. Like, that's all the publishers come up with this stuff, the cover art and things. So they settled on this spotting danger kind of title sequence. So the first book is Spotting Danger Before It Spots You. You know, the second one is Spotting Danger Before It Spots Your Kids, Spotting Danger, you know, so it's all spotting danger, sure, which I understand. But originally I started calling the series the Heads Up series. It's a 4-book series in total. And I call it the Heads Up series because that's the one thing that anybody can do right now to increase their situational awareness. And that's simply just lift their head up when they're out in public. You know, get your head out of your cell phone, put that away, and just engage with your environment. Look at what's going on around you. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've just sat around and watched people in airports who are so locked into their cell phones that they run right into a glass door, to go up a down escalator. You know what I mean? But just because they're so focus locked on this little electronic device that they carry around in their pocket that they let these other things go right past them. And it's, you know, sometimes those are things that could pose a danger to your safety and you need to be aware of it. So just, you know, the one thing I tell people is just get your head up, engage with your environment. You know, don't let that cell phone be the center of your universe. And whatever you do, if you have children, you know, don't use that cell phone as a babysitter and get your own child, you know, into that habit of every time they feel bored or they need that little hit of dopamine or see how many likes they got on a post, they're just sucked into that cell phone when what they should be focused on is what's in their immediate environs, because, you know, your cell phone's not gonna, you know, it's not going to attack you.
Right. You know? Yeah. And you mentioned Lieutenant Grossman, and I've gone to one of his presentations. I've seen him speak, and yeah, he has that line, and you correct me if I'm not saying that right, but you know, you don't pick when the boogeyman comes. You pick whether you're ready for it or something along those lines.
Something along those lines, right?
And one of the things, and even talking about like the consequence of habit, is acknowledging the fact that the people that are making these things for our phones and these, you know, electronic devices, they understand our brains and they understand the loopholes, right? If we do this, right, we can keep them engaged. So it's gotta be an uphill battle, to try and to get this message across. And you and I talked about it before we hit record that what you're teaching people to do is in some ways it's just tapping into what is a natural thing that we used to always do.
Right.
And when I talk to even my family about situational awareness, it has to be presented in a way, like you said, I'm not trying to scare anybody. You know, this isn't a thing to instill fear. This is actually a tool to instill freedom, right? And you can be more open to being out in the world and seeing what's going on. We all know violence is there.
100%.
It's just, how do we prepare for it?
Yeah. And that's the one thing that I really try to push, especially in my second book, which is Spotting Danger Before It Spots Your Kids. And that's for people that have parents or their parents who have children that are under the age of 12. You know, how do you get them to start developing these positive habits and engaging with their environment? You're not necessarily setting an 8-year-old down and saying, hey, we're going to talk about situational awareness for a little while, because you're going to lose them right off the bat. But you can do little things as a parent, like play little games that keep them in tune with their environment, keeps their cell phones and their iPads put away, and just get them kind of looking around and acknowledging the fact that there are other people and other things happening around them that could affect them and how they interact with their environment. So, you know, the one thing that I harp on in that book the most is not using fear, like you said, as a tactic for teaching your children, because I don't want a scared child. Right. You know, I want a child that's open and engaged with their environment and friendly and able to talk to people and you know, have some level of what I call environmental intelligence. You know, they understand what's happening around them. And I don't do the whole stranger danger thing because not all strangers are bad people. As a matter of fact, in some instances, and it's happened to me in my life with my children, where they have to look towards a stranger for help.
Yeah.
The trick is teaching them what to look for, you know, what actions kind of imply whether a person is a good person to approach or somebody you should probably stay away from. So those are the things. And, you know, fear, parents that use fear, or people, you know, adults that are just afraid of every little thing around the corner, 9 times out of 10, that's because of, just like you said, they're not engaged with their environment. They don't understand the natural order of things when they're out in public because they're so focused, locked on, you know, whatever's going on inside their head or on their, you know, their Instagram account. And it keeps them from being able to kind of socialize and, you know, tune themselves into what's happening around them so that they can make, you know, sound decisions if something bad were to happen.
Yeah. And that's what I liked about it. You mentioned about a stranger playing a role in the safety of somebody in your own life. I'm guessing that that's in the book about teens. And that was even an experience with your own family member. Can you give a quick breakdown? Again, we don't want to give the book away, but just kind of a quick breakdown of that incident in what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, which one? Like there's several incidents that were involved, you know, my family. In the teen book, I talk about the incident with my daughter, which she's driving. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. So my youngest daughter, Emily, she's going for a drive and she's got this little red convertible Mustang. Right. And she's driving through this old neighborhood. It's kind of cool streets and a little, you know, like a little block of these quaint little shops and stuff. And she's driving through and there's an old. This is right out of like a, you know, Wrong Turn kind of movie or something like that. But there's a rusted old pickup truck, you know, with some sketchy looking dude sitting in it that pulls up behind her. And, you know, she's at a red light and she's checking her mirrors and everything. She's trying to be aware of what's happening around her. She's fairly, you know, a fairly new driver as well. So she spots this guy and, you know, at the next red light, he kind of pulls up beside of her and they make this awkward eye contact. And he's really being a little more creepy than she would like.
Yeah.
So she's a young girl. This is an older dude. And she decides, because there have been other things that's happened in our life where, you know, I had to talk to our children about situational awareness. They understand what a counter surveillance route is. They understand, you know, certain things that most kids their age probably don't have any knowledge of.
Yeah.
So she decided she was going to run a quick, you know, surveillance detection route and try to figure out if this dude was following or not. So she turns to the right and then she comes to a light and she just kind of boxes around and comes back onto the same street that she was originally on. And she did this because there's no reason for someone to take that route.
Yes.
You know, logically, if you're just trying to get from point A to point B, you wouldn't take this long, you know, drawn out route. Well, anyway, this guy stayed behind her the whole time. So once that happened, she kind of confirmed the fact that, yes, this guy is following me. So then she starts thinking through it like, okay, what has dad taught me? What do I need to do? She's in an unfamiliar area. She's kind of far from home and she don't know exactly what she should do. So what she did was, you know, it's a nice affluent neighborhood.
Yeah.
And she starts driving through this part of town where these houses are kind of lining the streets. And she looks over one street and she sees this older couple in the yard. They got an SUV. There's a sticker on the back that says they have a German Shepherd, you know, like Shepherd lover kind of. So she's putting all this information together, you know, so that she can find someone that may be trustworthy to help her out with this situation where this guy's following her. So she pulls into the driveway of this elderly couple and they come out to greet her, you know, like, hey, is everything okay? You lost or whatever. Sure. And she explained to the man, you know, that she ran across it. This is what's happening. Like, I don't know exactly how this neighborhood is. I'm just kind of passing through and this guy's following me. Well, as she's talking to this dude, the dude pulls past the house and stops like a couple doors down, like waiting for her to leave. So he's like, see there, she's like, yeah, you know, there he is. And he's still following me, you know? So he's like, don't worry, we'll handle this.
Yeah.
So they get on the phone, you know, and they call the cops and the dude's making a big show of pointing at the truck. The dude sees what's happening and realizes, okay, they're on to me. I need to get out of here. I don't want to get in any trouble. So he takes off. Then my daughter gets on the phone with me like, hey, this just happened. I'm like, it doesn't matter where you were going or what you were doing. What I need you to do now is go straight to the interstate, get right back home.
Yeah.
Right. So don't go the same way that you just came.
Sure.
You know, get on the interstate, fastest route home, get back here. And that's what happened. But, you know, it's kind of gratifying to me as a parent to know that her at such a young age, and you know what it's like when you're a new driver, a teenager, sure, you're so like worried about everything,
yeah,
right? That you can get focus locked on what you're doing behind the wheel and lose track of what's happening around you. And, you know, I always taught my kids, it's not necessarily you, you're a good driver. You got to watch out for what other people are doing. And one of those things, because of some things that had happened that I outline in some of the other books, is, you know, there may be bad people out there trying to do bad things to you and you're not even realizing.
Yeah.
So by being in tune with your environment and picking up on these little pre-incident indicators, like we were talking about, knowing things like how to run a quick surveillance detection route to tell if you've been followed, then, you know, those things went a long way in keeping my daughter safe.
Sure.
So if I can pass that information along to her and it helps her in her life, then why not give that information to everybody? 100%. So, you know, I started writing this stuff down and, you know, making notes and putting this class together, and it eventually turned into this book series. But, you know, and I try to keep things in easy to understand terms. I don't use a lot of military or law enforcement jargon because I want a 16, 17 year old girl that's getting ready to, you know, start her senior year in high school, or she's ready to go off to college or something like that, to be able to pick this book up, read it, and get some information out of it that could possibly, you know, kind of flip a switch in her head and make her realize that, okay, you know, it's important for me to pay attention to this because it could affect my safety.
I think one of the easiest ways to make those connections, and this was my own experience of driving with my two daughters that are teaching them to drive. You know, you use the word profiling in law enforcement. That is that word, they don't like using it, but we
right.
all profile when we're driving. We do it constantly. That's part of our keeping ourselves safe. You're looking around, you can see, it could be, you mentioned a sticker on the back of a car. It could be a car next to you that's, you know, it's lowered. It's got the shocker sticker. There's just telltale signs that, not saying this person's a terrible driver or they're an unsafe driver, but there's indicators that they might be, that they're more likely to be. You know, it could just be the way they're swerving in a lane. There's all of these little things that say, hey, I need to back away from this person because they might be a liability and I don't want to be involved in an accident. Right.
Right.
There's no difference in us walking around in the world. Like, these indicators are always going to be there, and there has to be some level of profiling for your own safety. You know, my family, They think I'm a little crazy at times because it's like, we're going to a big event when there's a lot of people. It's not that I don't allow. I say you shouldn't wear flip flops. You know, like, just little things that if you got to get out of Dodge,
in case you got to bail out of there, you know, you can't run in flip flops.
You can't run in flip flops, man. And we need to get. Right. We're gonna get a T-shirt. Consequently, you can't run in flip flops.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I was just even going back to driving. Like, it was a half joke, but like, if the passenger has a foot outside the window, you know, like, just know that you stay away from the car.
Right. Like, yeah. You know? Well, you know, and the other thing too is what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, there are predators. There are predatory people around us every day. You know, people are looking to take advantage of somebody else, and you can. You know, like you were talking about profiling, that's exactly what predators do. They profile and they look for those weaker, softer targets that they can exploit. And, you know, that kind of extends past, like you were talking about, you know, we mentioned the stickers on the cars. That goes two ways. I don't have any stickers on my vehicle.
Same.
You know, I don't want anybody knowing that my kid goes to this school or that they were an honor grad or that I own this kind. I don't put the, you know, come and take them
stickers
on things, or, you know, this truck is protected by Glock.
Yeah,
none of that. Because the thing is if I've got that vehicle parked at Walmart and somebody's just kind of casing that parking lot looking for something of value that they could take, they may think, well, this dude's probably got a gun under the seat. You know, I can bust that window and then there you go. You know, so, you know, that goes both ways. You can use it to kind of identify people for what they are and what their intent may be, or people can use those same concepts to identify you, you know, for what you may be. And that may be a hard target, or it could be a soft target, you know, like, okay, I know this person has something of value because of these stickers. I know, and you see it all the time. And I always do this. I take pictures and I'll post them on Instagram, like of the back of people's cars without the license plate number or anything, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, these stickers, and be like, what can you tell me about this person just based on what you're seeing here? You know, they go to a certain, their kids go to a certain school, their little stick figure families. Okay. They got, you know, the mom and dad, they got three kids, a dog and a cat, you know, they got all this stuff. And if you got teenagers, you got kids, people can follow you home. And it's a pretty good bet, if you've got, you know, little kid stick figure stickers on the back of your car, that there's going to be computers, there's going to be laptops, there's going to be iPads, there's going to be gaming systems, there's going to be all this stuff in your house. You know, so why give people that information? Just, it's so much easier just to kind of try to blend in, be what, you know, we call the gray man, and not draw any undue attention to yourself. You can be a hard target and not let people know you're a hard target, right? Because the person that's like, hey, look at me, you know, I'm wearing my, you know, don't tread on me t-shirt with the American flag on the sleeve and my unit patch on the front, you know, whether it's police or military. So, you know, you may think that you're trying to look like a hard target, but someone out there will try you just because that you think you're a hard target. So you got to be, it's a balance. And I try to kind of outline what that balance is in the books and how you can, you know, stay engaged with your environment and be a hard target, kind of blend in and not draw undue attention to yourself, but at the same time, take all the information that your environment is giving you to use to your advantage.
It's like open source intel, right? And just so everybody knows what we're talking about, there's intelligence that, of another country wants to learn about the secrets of a country. They can try and break in their secret systems and their computer systems, or they can just start collecting what they call open source. They start seeing that the stuff that is put out to everyone, and you can start drawing conclusions. And I've said the same thing. Like, you know, if, and this isn't a knock on anybody who's proud of being a gun owner.
Right.
The more stickers you put on the car, that I see that and I go, okay, that there's a gun in that car. There is a high likelihood that, like you said, under that seat, I'm going to find a gun. And if, and if you're a predator, you're a bad guy, that's what they see. They don't see and go, I better stay away from that. I mean, you're delusional if that's what you think. So
a big majority of guns that are used in the commission of crime are stolen. You know, how do people get those guns? You know, if they see all those stickers on my truck and they follow me home, you know, I'm not storing all those guns in my vehicle. I probably have them in my house. So, you know, and then you put all these pieces of these puzzles together. This is what predators do, right? They put that puzzle together. So they see those stickers on your car. Let's just do this like a for instance kind of thing, right? They kind of played out this scenario, but they see these stickers on your car, right? They know you got kids. They know you're, you know, a big fan of Glock and that you're a USPCA shooter or whatever that is, right? So they see this. They can sort of, you know, deduce from what they see on your car that you have, you know, electronics in your house, you have weapons in your house, things that they can use that would be valuable to them for whatever reason. Then they follow you home, right? And now they're checking out your security and they, you know, they're getting your name off of the front of your house and all this different stuff. Right. And then they can look at your social media feed. And if you're planning a big vacation or you check in because you went to the movies, there's a pretty good, you know, chance that if you do something like that, this person knows, if they're looking at you on social media, that you're going to be away from the house for a good 2 or 3 hours. Mm. So took the family to the movies, you know, right? So now they can go in there and they can take all that stuff that they know is in there because you told them it's on the back of your vehicle, you know? So you just got to be careful with that kind of stuff because there's so many, there's a great, I'd have to look it up for you. I write about it in the books, but there's a guy that was, he was a burglar, right? He broke into people's homes. He did that for a living and they interviewed him and he put together all these YouTube videos eventually that was like, this is what I did. And what he was a personal trainer. So he would see all these people at this gym he worked in and he would look at their vehicles. He would look at the way they were dressed, the jewelry they wear when they came into the gym, all this different stuff. And then he would figure out what neighborhoods they lived in. He'd lace up his running shoes, right? Go jogging through these neighborhoods, casing these homes. And then that's how he would pick, you know, but it's all the same thing. They're just picking up these little indicators that we're feeding them and putting together this big picture and giving them all the information they need as to whether we're hard targets, soft targets, if we have anything of value. You know, it's a crazy situation to think about. And if you think about it too hard, you drive yourself nuts and you're paranoid and you're scared of everything, like you talked about earlier. But, you know, if you learn how to balance that, that situational awareness with your lifestyle, you don't have to change that much. There's just little things that you can do to make yourself safer, keep you and your family out of trouble. Right. And kind of keep the bad guy at bay.
What's Roosevelt's line? Walk quietly, but carry a big stick. You know,
that's right.
You know?
That's right. Yeah.
And people, if we go back to, it's not a shaming thing because it's not, we talk about intentions and we talk about the message we try and give out to everyone. So without realizing, like you said, there's predators out there and this is what they're doing. So it's just that awareness. And once you realize that somebody can, it's like, reverse search your entire, well, a good portion of your life through something as small as a sticker, just the same way your daughter did by, you know, looking this car, they see him a proud owner of a German Shepherd. You're like, all right, well, that doesn't mean this is the safest person in the world, but at the same time, you know, there's all of these indicators that lower my level of concern and make it more likely that this person's willing to help me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like in the case with my daughter, you know, she saw that, okay, it's an elderly couple in a nice neighborhood. Yeah. They own a German Shepherd, you know, it's a nice vehicle. It's, you know, there's not like a bunch of garbage in the middle of the front yard or something. You know what I mean? So she used all this information that her environment, an unfamiliar environment, by the way, was giving her to make an informed decision as to what would be the best move to ensure her safety. And that's what it's all about, right? Just being able to take in all those little clues, right? And put together scenario-based kind of what ifs, you know, like, okay, what would happen if I do this? What would happen if I do that? You know, she started playing those, what I call what if games. As soon as she realized this guy was behind her and something was off, right? She started, okay, what if this guy's following me? Now, how do I determine that? I run this quick counter surveillance route, right? Or surveillance detection route. Okay, now I've confirmed that he is following me. Now, what if he tries to get me off the road somehow? So I need to get myself off the road in the safest possible place before he has a chance to, right? Yeah. So it's this kind of strategic little, you know, cat and mouse game that they were playing. But in the end, you know, my daughter knew more about how to keep herself safe than he knew about how to do her damage. Yeah. And at the end of the day, if you can kind of tip those scales, you know, into the favor of the person who's not the predator, then you're doing everybody a favor.
Yeah. It's walking through these things before, you know, like you said, the what if, you know, going through some of these scenarios, they you know, going back to a training thing, I'm going to guess you might've said before, but your body doesn't go where your mind already hasn't been. So walking through these scenarios before they happen. And, you know, we've seen it. A lot of the listeners here are really active people. We've got a huge group of runners that follow the show and ambassadors. And you know, we've seen these, like this tragic story that happened in Tennessee where this woman was, you know, unfortunately lost her life and was murdered. And this isn't to say that, that all of these scenarios are 100% avoidable. But the goal is to have as many tools in place to be able to see the things before they happen. And then once you spot the danger, and this is what I really liked about your book, is once that happens, okay, here are some tools to mitigate the threat. Right. Do as much as you possibly can. So,
there are situations, you know, where they're unavoidable. There are unavoidable situations. And like you're talking about the instance with the lady in Tennessee, that's incredibly unfortunate. And I would never, you know, I would never be the guy to take that incident and look at it and then try to Monday morning quarterback this is where she went wrong. This is what she should have done, that type thing. Right. Like, I don't understand the full circumstances. All I know is, you know, and her situation proves the point, whether you're aware of it or not, there are predatory people out there that want to do harm to you. And you know, there are things that you need to do as just a private citizen to protect yourself. You're not going to be able to avoid every situation. You may not be able to come out unscathed in every situation, but there are little things you can do to kind of improve your chances of either one, seeing it coming in advance and avoiding it altogether, or at least running those little what if games in your mind so that if it does happen and you don't have the opportunity to avoid it altogether, you understand what's your best route for escape. What's your best route for de-escalation or confrontation? You know, should it come to that? You've already kind of got these little pieces in place in your mind so that when it happens, you can act on them more quickly. All you're doing is you're decreasing your reaction time, right? And that's what's important when it comes to situational awareness. That's what it's really for. You've always heard that, you know, there's a, you know, action is faster than reaction, but those two things can be equal. It's unanticipated action that's always faster.
Yeah.
Right. If I can anticipate someone's action, then my reaction to whatever it is they're doing can be equal to, if not greater than theirs. And that's where, you know, that kind of, you know, those two roads meet. And as long as I'm prepared, I'm situationally aware, and I've got this plan in place in the back of my mind, in the majority of cases, I can come out on top. Anybody can. Right. But unfortunately, people don't think in those terms, right? Because we're the only animals, you know, you talk about Gavin De Becker in his book, The Gift of Fear. And one thing that he highlights in there, and one thing that I always try to point out to people, is we're the only animals on the planet, that will look danger straight in the face, right? And will try to justify its presence as opposed to getting away from it, right? We'll know something's off because our intuition is telling us that. We'll have these little pre-incident indicators that we've seen that tell us shit's about to go bad and I should probably remove myself from the situation. But in our mind, we're going, well, why would this dude want to hurt me? He's probably here because of this or that. And we try to justify this, you know, the presence of this predator. And it's to our disadvantage. You know, you're at a watering hole in the Serengeti, right? You watch like Animal Planet or something, and there's a zebra, right? And this lion's coming up. That zebra's not going to think, well, he's probably just looking for a drink of water right? I'm good. Right. I'll just hang out right here. No, it's never going to work out good for the zebra, right? So you know, we're no different. We like to think that we are, but we're all animals, man. And yeah. Among that pack of animals, there are some animals that just want to tear shit up. They want to hurt other animals. Yeah, and that's the world we live in. We got to acknowledge it if we want to confront it and live our best life without having to live in fear all the time.
Yeah, it's that acceptance that violence, it's not just something that happens that you hear about on the news or happens to somebody else. Like it could be at your front door. It could be. And it's okay to acknowledge that and then act upon it. I think if it's been, like I said, a very long time since I read that book, The Gift of Fear, but I think there was, they actually interviewed some women who had been raped, and they talk about some of the indicators leading up to it. This woman, I distinctly remember this woman saying, I felt like something was wrong. Like that somebody wanted to come in to use the phone, something had happened. And this is, we're going back before cell phones, but.
It's a fantastic story. And Gavin De Becker tells it in his book. Jason Riley, who wrote, Jason Van Horn and Patrick Riley.
Okay.
Those are the, that's it. But anyway, they wrote the book Left of Bang, which is a book about situational awareness. It's got more of a military bent to it, but you know, they talk about that story. And then I mentioned it in my first book as well. And it's this lady who lived in an apartment building, right? And she was coming in with some groceries and the door, the security door that she normally comes through that, you know, there's like a number you got to punch in or something to get in was open. And she was like, well, that's weird. You know, the neighbors must have left it open. Again, pre-incident indicator right there. And the first thing she did was she tried to, you know, to justify why is the door left open? Well, probably one of the neighbors. Right. And again, not the Monday morning quarterback, but this is something that you can kind of look back on and dissect and see, you know, where things kind of went south from there. But then the next thing was she ran into this guy in the hall who was a stranger. She didn't recognize him. He didn't live in the building that she knew of. Right. And he saw that she had her arms full of groceries and he offered to help. So, you know, when a lot of people don't realize what some of these pre-incident indicators are. So that's why I try to focus on them and outline them in the book as best I can. But that's another pre-incident indicator, that unsolicited, you know, offer to help. Right. Why? You know, I obviously have this under control. Right. Maybe the dude's being a gentleman, but maybe he's just trying to get closer to me for some nefarious reason. Right. Those are the options you have to weigh in your head. And your intuition plays a big part in that. Well, then he gets to her apartment door and, you know, he goes, well, she gets the door open. And he's like, well, let me help you put these inside. And she says, no. Right. And he's like, no, I insist. You got your hands full. I'm just going to put them on the table and I'll leave. I promise. So there's more pre-incident indicators right there. The failure to accept the word no. Right. And then the unsolicited promise. Why do you have to promise me that you'll leave?
Yes.
Right. Like stuff like that. Those little indicators are what kind of seeps into the back of our minds and tells us that something is wrong. Something's off. Right. So she's picking up on these little signals, but she's not properly interpreting them. So she lets this man in her house. And then that's when, you know, all this horrific stuff happened to this poor lady. In the end, you know, she was raped with a gun held to her head for 3 hours in her own apartment. And the guy gets out of the bed at one point and he closes the window in her room. And he's like, listen, I'm going to go out here and get some water. Right. And I'm not going to hurt you. And as long as you stay quiet, you know, I'll leave and everything will be okay. Right. So again, he's promising her that everything's going to be okay. Yeah. Why did he close the window? Right. And then he turns the radio up before he leaves the room.
Oh, yeah.
And then when he's outside the room, she hears him rummaging around in her silverware drawers. And at that point, right, after this traumatic event, she starts thinking, well, you know, like this dude's going to kill me. I don't know why I know that, but I know it.
Yeah.
And I got to get out. So she did. She wrapped a sheet around herself and she hauled ass. She was able to get past the guy. She got out of the hall and she was able to get the help of the neighbors and call 911 and, you know, everything like that. But horrific, horrific event. But it wasn't until after the event when police were kind of, you know, telling her, you know, or kind of interviewing her, taking her statements and stuff like that, that she realized it kind of just dawned on her like, oh shit. Like, okay. So this guy closed the window and turned the radio up so nobody could hear what he was about to do to me.
Yeah.
Right. That's why that happened. And then he said he was going to go get a drink of water. Why was he rummaging around in my silverware drawers? He was looking for a knife, right? Something he could kill this girl with. And those little environmental cues were what was screaming at her, you know, and her intuition kicked in. She was like, he's going to kill me. I got to get out. And that's what, unfortunately, all this bad stuff happened to her. But, you know, the silver lining, if you could consider it such a thing in a situation like this, is she left with her life. And the only way that happened is because she tuned into her environment. She listened to her intuition. She took these little cues and she understood what they meant. Or even if she didn't understand what they meant in the moment, her body was telling her that this is a bad situation. I have to go right now. I have to take this chance. So, and it worked out that, you know, she survived that. But, you know, unfortunately, the guilt and the, you know, the anguish that comes along with an event like that is something that the victim lives with for the rest of their life.
Of course.
Yeah.
Gary,
there's that situation, but it proves an important point.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there's so much to this. And obviously, we're going to have links to your website and the book, the show that you're on with Elizabeth Vargas. But is there somewhere else? I mean, is there something you speak about publicly other than just on podcasts? If there was a corporation, if there was a church group, if there was somebody that wanted to maybe have a presentation about this, is there someplace they can go to kind of reach out to you about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So my hub is kind of my website, which is GaryQuessenberry.com. And I know the name is kind of hard to spell, but you know, GaryQuessenberry.com is the hub for everything. That's where all my social media links are. You can reach out to me and email me, but I do a lot of speaking at different events. I work with A Girl and a Gun, you know, which is a big female organization. A couple of them, actually, A Girl and a Gun, the Well-Armed Woman. I do presentations for them. I also do presentations for groups, the Church Safety Guys. I've been on their podcast a couple of times. But, you know, I like to present this stuff in public and in person to, you know, corporations. And everybody can benefit from this. You know, if you're a CEO of a business and you've got employees that have to walk through a dark parking lot at night to get back to their cars, it's important for you as a leader to understand that there's an inherent danger there, or at least a perceived danger. If in your employees, if they're afraid to walk through the parking lot, give them the tools they need to be situationally aware and kind of put some of the, you know, some of the control back in their own hands. So I have to speak to people about that. I speak to groups, whether it's church groups or businesses, small businesses, large businesses, anything, because everybody, whether you're a parent, school teacher, a CEO, you know, an employee at a furniture factory, it doesn't matter. Everybody can benefit from situational awareness. And it's something that's so easy to do. There are little, you know, this podcast, consequences of habit. You know, there are little things that you can make a habit that'll have huge consequences in your life down the road, right? To help you avoid dangerous situations. And you may not realize it at the time, but at the end of the day, if you're laying safe and sound in your bed and nothing happened to you, you know, there's a reason. There's a reason. It's because you're doing these things and you're presenting yourself as more of a hard target to whether it's a resource or a process predator. And you're the one coming home safe at night because you know what your environment means, what cues it's given you, how to interpret those, and what actions to take to keep yourself safe based on what your environment's telling you.
And just like any habit, there's a ripple effect. You talk about being a parent. Yeah. If you're doing this, you're presenting it in a way that you mentioned the word control. You're giving people more control over their life, right? That's really what you're doing. And through that, through your own actions, your own habits, you're instilling that within your kids. And every parent's job, their main job in the world is to keep them safe. So if through our own actions, keeping ourselves safe, our family members safe, you're laying the groundwork for them to start doing the same and you know, taking the fear out of it and making it a part of their control system, man. So I love it.
It's leadership by example. You know, if your kids see you walking around with your face constantly buried in your cell phone or texting and driving, you know, I can't tell you the number of times like I've said or done something behind the wheel of a car in an instant that my kids picked up on in the back seat. Yes. And, you know, you don't even realize that you're setting this example for these young minds, but you know, you being active and engaged with your environment and your children seeing that and understanding how it impacts their life and how it can impact them in the future if they adapt or adopt those habits in their own life, you know, that's important. And that's what I try to outline in the books. So, you know, the book is in a sequence. The book series is in a sequence. There's four books total. And the first one is Spotting Danger Before It Spots You. And that's kind of the general overview of situational awareness that anybody can pick up and read, whether you're a college student, a parent, you know, somebody that's just got to work in a sketchy neighborhood. It doesn't matter. Right. You can pick that up and you can learn a lot from it. The second book, Spotting Danger Before It Spots Your Kids, is just for that, you know, for parents who have young children. The third book, Spotting Danger Before It Spots Your Teens, the parent or the teen can pick that book up and read it and walk away with some knowledge that'll keep them safe, whether they're getting ready to go off to college or you're just having problems raising a teenager who's maybe hanging out with shady characters or putting themselves in situations where it could be dangerous. The fourth book, the one that's getting ready to come out in April, Spotting Danger for Travelers. Mm-hmm. So as a federal air marshal, that was kind of my wheelhouse, you know, but that's the one where I tie all those other books together. And you can take what you know as a parent, what your younger children know, what your teens know, and you can take all this information. And as a family unit, you know, you can go out any place in the world where you're familiar with it or not, and you have each other's back and you understand the things that could indicate that something could be off, something could be a threat to your safety and how to deal with that, not just on an individual level, but on a family level, you know, at all ages. So anytime you can do that, anytime you can kind of add to your perimeter security, right, then you're doing yourself a huge favor. And that's the purpose of this book series as a whole, is to give everybody those tools, you know, whether it's an individual or family.
Yeah. Cause that's what a lot of people don't realize. Like we, you know, we talk about stickers on cars, those you can control, and you can control some things while traveling, but there's other things that you can't control. Like I've been traveling overseas before, and just through speaking English with another group that I'm with, that is a telltale sign to a potential predator. Hey, this is somebody's not probably from here. This is a tourist. And I had a group of guys come up behind me one time and I could sense them, right? Like something wasn't, and it was just the way their gait, everything was not right in my mind. And I, you know, at the time, and this is something you probably have heard a lot of times, I couldn't pinpoint exactly what it was, but it was that primal instinct that we all have. And I turned around to him, and he looked up at one of them, looked at me, he goes, "What's the matter? You scared? You think we're going to like shoplift or not shoplift, but that we're going to pickpocket or something, well, whatever it is."
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, that's exactly. And the fact that he went right to that, and I turned around and made just that eye contact. That was my confirmation that, this dude was up to no good. And just the fact that I turned around, stood up tall, looked at him in his eyes and let him know, like, motherfucker, I know what you're up to. Like I see you.
Well, you know, and I talk about stuff like that in the books is, okay, so there are two types of predators, right? There's resource predators and process predators. A resource predator sees you for, like in your case, right? Like a tourist, you're obviously out of place. Maybe you got a backpack. You might have a laptop in there or something. Yep. You have something of value that they could take and flip for cash or drugs or whatever they want. They're using you as a means to an end, right? That's a resource predator. A process predator, on the other hand, is much different because they could care less what you have on your person or if you're a tourist or if you're out of place. They're in it for the act of violence itself. And that's where you get like the rapists and stuff like that. So, but the point I want to make is whether it's a resource predator or a process predator, they have something in common, right? They don't want to get caught and they don't want to get hurt, right? Unless they're a complete sociopath, which, you know, some of them are, right? But they don't want to get hurt. They don't want to get caught. So if they think they can spot someone who's a soft target, like say they targeted you because they heard you talking to someone else and they realize you're not from there, you might not be familiar with the area. They could kind of get you into a place where there's no cameras or there's not a lot of foot traffic and they could take advantage of you. They could steal your backpack. They take your wallet, get your cash, whatever, right? So, but the fact that you were in tune with your environment, you realize you were being followed, and then you confronted that situation, the first thing that pops into their mind is, okay, this dude is going to either fight back or sound an alarm, which is going to get them what? It's either going to get them caught or it's going to get them hurt, right? So that's when they tend to back off, you know, but it's a risk versus reward. We do it every day. They do it every day. And if you can be a bigger risk to the predator than you are reward, then you're going to walk away safe every time.
I love it, man. I think we need more of it. And it's, again, it's not to scare people. It's just, it's start a thought process, because whether you're thinking about it or not, a predator is. So might as well get yourself as prepared as possible. I appreciate you coming on, man. It's just great to see you. It's great to talk to you again. I haven't seen you in a bit.
Man. Yeah. It's always good to catch up. You got to come down to Virginia, man. I got me a little farm down here now. I built my own range on my property.
I'm in. and also one last thing, if anyone's looking for, what I consider the best concealment holster on the market, man, it's something I use on a regular basis. Check out the Q series. It was developed by my good friend who I'm talking to right now. And obviously there's, make sure you're good to go in your state and whatever the rules are. But if you're looking for a good, concealable holster that does as good a job as I've ever seen on keeping something. Again, we don't want the world to know what we're doing and carrying, check out the Q series.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Yeah. My holster business, we've actually been around since 2014. It's gone, you know, pretty quick, but it's thriving, and we get orders from all over the world now for these holsters, little minimalist inside the waistband concealment holsters. I mean, we got a couple of new products on the horizon coming down the pipe. I'll make sure I get one in your hands.
Perfect.
But I appreciate you plugging that, man. Yeah. It's the Q series. I'm the Q Questenberry, right? Q series. And it's something that I came up with working as a federal air marshal, because, you know, you're walking around with a gun 14, 15 hours a day, sitting on planes, running through airports. It's got to be comfortable, you know, and it's got to be secure, and it's got to meet all these certain standards that we set for concealment. But at the same time, it's got to, you know, you have to have confidence in it as the end user. And I think that's something that we were able to accomplish.
100%. So, cool.
Yeah. Appreciate it, man.
No problem, buddy. All right, Gary, be good. Like I said, we'll have all the links to all of this stuff, and you know, let's do this again here real soon.
Sounds good, buddy. I appreciate it. Always good catching up, man.
All right, brother. You're good. A lot of things are changing around here, a consequence of habit. A lot of updates, a lot of things moving around, but one thing remains the same, and that is my unwavering support and love for Athletic Brewing Company. These guys have been part of my journey from the very beginning, and I was even curious about what not drinking beer, well, not drinking leaded beer would look like and how it could possibly make this happen. But these guys provide a product that makes that transition fairly simple. So maybe you just want to either cut down on some of your drinking, you just want to replace it with something that doesn't have alcohol, or like me, alcohol does not fit into your life. Either or. These guys got something for you. The one prerequisite, you have to like good beer. If you like crappy beer, look elsewhere. If you guys have not tried Athletic Brewing Company and you want to give it a shot, use promo code capital COH20. Get you 20% off your first order. Everybody, that's a wrap. Like always, thanks again for checking us out. This show is brought to you by the team here at Consequence of Habit and is an arm of our 501c3 nonprofit. The show is produced and edited by the one and only Anthony Palmer and is part of the Palm Tree Pod Company network of podcasts. That's it. I'll catch you guys next week.